college basketball fans. Welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss college basketball, obviously. However, we're not going to be talking live games because, as you know, there is no live games. Now, we should have been coming off what could have been a great Sweet 16 in Elite Eight games, man. I mean, we were just breaking down last week all the way to the Final Four based off ESPN's bracketology. We picked the winners and all that, but when you just look at, you know, the first round games in the round of 32, just those games alone, the potential there, they were some phenomenal matchups. But the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, man, jeez, they're just, part of me is just still in the back of my head, like, man, what could have been. But welcome back to the College Ball Show. We really want to say we appreciate everybody that's still listening to the podcast. We like that we're a distraction for you. We realize there's a lot of serious stuff going on. There's plenty of time throughout the day to think about that stuff. Maybe not to be able to handle it for those people that still have to work. They must just be crazy busy right now. But, you know, we realize there's a ton going on in the world, but we do appreciate that we can be a distraction for you. So we're going to keep doing this, whether it's this show and next week or if we do another one beyond that. Whatever it is, we're definitely going to keep delivering content to you. And it's a lot of memorable moments, whether it's a, you know, like I talked about Duke and UNLV the last couple of shows. This week, I'm going to talk about UConn, like mid-90s until like early 2000s and the run that they made. Maybe some more Big East tournament, you know, moments. And even like players, like, for instance, like Wally Szczerbiak, Wally World from Miami of Ohio. Yeah, they didn't go deep in the tournament, but it was fun to watch them. So stories like that. We also have this list that you can, much like the bracketology, you guys could, you know, kind of follow it at home. We have this list from SB Nation, the top 50 players in college basketball for 2019 and 20. Now, we're not going to break down every player or the whole list. We're just going to kind of give our, you know, our basically some of the disagreements we may have with the list or with each other, kind of like look at the rankings and be like, man, they overdid that dude, or why isn't he higher on the list type stuff. And then, you know, some other subjects like the best teams not to win a title. There's a ton of those, right? I'm going to talk about Kansas 96-97 this year, or that year, I should say. So there's a variety of topics that we're going to get into. But like I said, we definitely appreciate you guys listening to these podcasts. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoveradio. It streams live and it also archives there. But you don't have to just listen to it on Blog Talk under the Ropeadove Radio banner on actual Blog Talk. You can download it there, whatever. But you can also find it all across the board, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher. Like I said, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify. You can use your Siri or Alexa through TuneIn or Spotify to find that platform. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, it's football, it's boxing, it's baseball. It's everything in between. Whether it's podcasts or the website has a lot of great archived and, you know, continually posted articles. Whether it's, you know, current topics or past teams and players and whatnot. They also got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. That's thegruelingtruth.com. Real quick, one more thing. A lot of people stuck in their house. A lot of people either, you know, watching Netflix or watching cable TV. Some people now all of a sudden want cable TV for a couple of months. I got something for you to try. I do use it myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. Okay, so it's you do have a 7-day free trial. There's no annual contracts, just like most plans out there. But the plans themselves start as low as $60 a month. You could stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. However, if you've tried live streaming something, not archive watching something on Netflix, you know what I mean? But when you actually live stream and you're watching it, it does take pretty good internet. So if you're in a, you know, area or region of the country, maybe on the outskirts that just doesn't have great, you know, coverage when it comes to that, there is AT&T TV Now. That's in limited areas, you know, regions, I should say, whether it's here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, whether it's New York, Florida, California, parts of Texas, all the way up to Seattle and Washington, other places in Kansas, to Wichita, St. Louis, another place in Missouri. So it's basically just Google it, put your area code in there, see if, you know, if they got it. Otherwise, it's AT&T TV Now live streaming cable. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host now. And like I said at the top of the show, man, you know, there's a ton of serious stuff going on. We realize, or most people realize that, I should say. But, you know, in the back of your head, you're still a sports fan. You're still trying to get your fix. You know what I mean? And I am really happy, and both of us are really happy that we can distract you for a little bit. Like I said, we appreciate all the people listening still. But it's hard, based off the first round and the round of 32, it's hard not to think about what the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight would have produced over this last weekend, man.
It would have been really good. And what's crazy, and I normally don't say this, but of what would have been the Sweet 16 of the past 4 days ago, you could have legit argued that 12 of those teams could have won the title. I'm just from the way this year played out, and I mean, I guess you could say is maybe there's some upsets, but with the way this year's gone, I would have felt really confident saying, hey, Chris, we 75% of teams left in this tournament could cut down the damn nets. And that's normally a discussion you never, ever have. Normally it's, okay, this is Carolina's year, this is Duke's year, this is Kentucky's year. And then with that being said, or, you know, this is year for Izzo. Like, and then you have maybe two or three teams that, well, maybe this team could beat Izzo, Duke, Kentucky, Carolina. You know, it's a short list. But, hell, this year, I mean, again, life matters, and we want everyone to stay safe. It was a really unfortunate year for the basketball gods, because this would have probably been one of the best tournaments we've ever seen. When we did a show a couple weeks ago, breaking down what would have been the second round matchups, not even the second weekend, the first Saturday, Sunday, we were looking at potential Sweet 16 Elite Eight matchups on paper that you normally like get massive ratings. You know, again, it probably would have been a Michigan State, Virginia, like it, we would have been spoiled. So I'm hoping the basketball gods repeat next year for us. I'm sure we won't get that lucky, but I'm hoping just by the grace of God, we get another magical bracket next year where we can sit in sport bars and drink beer and wash our hands and enjoy a lot of basketball. I'm hoping that's the case, brother. I really do.
I know. And you realize how much like live entertainment is, this is the threshold, like live entertainment and also just nightlife, no matter what it is, going out for a nice meal, going out to a hole in the wall, going out to a club, whatever it is, like, our country is built off this live entertainment, dude.
And I get that. I mean, I watch sports. I'm in the like top 5% in our country. Like that, my life is, I go to teach, I coach. I mean, I got a couple friends I call, and my life is sports. That's like, that's it. And you know, it's so weird to just, I'm suffering through. I'm not suffering, but I'm watching replays, which I enjoy doing. But being a sport fan, it's really hard to watch a full game replay. Like I've been rewatching like the Washington Nationals like playoff segments because they won the title this year and that's my team. But it's like 10 to 20 minute blocks. Or like yesterday ESPN showed the Max Scherzer 20 strikeout game a couple years ago. So I watched that, you know. But
or you can watch like the last 8 minutes of a game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, I remember this was a close game, I'll watch the second half or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and last night the NHL Network played a game last year where a team went on a power, like the Sharks Vegas NHL playoff game, which was sick. But I still watched maybe like 30 minutes of the 2 hours. So, you know, it's
right.
You do what you got to do. But I forget who was saying this. I heard this on some sport network. But basically, imagine the ratings that are going to be like when any sport comes back in our country.
Yeah, and, right.
And I think people who weren't sport fans are just going to like, oh, my God, you're telling me I can watch something that is live?
Yeah, right. Yeah, everyone's going to be so burnt out on they'll have no more series. And a lot of these new series that were going to come out in the next 6 months, a lot of them aren't done filming. So they've had to shut down production, movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, think about all these. I mean, I'm sure some of the big blockbusters were already almost done, you know, for the summer or whatever. Sure. But there's a lot of movies that are just – that can't wrap, you know what I mean? It's – or they had to wrap the project, but they're not done with it. So, yeah, you're right. And you know what's funny? Out of all the sports, the one thing that holds the best is boxing. And it's hands down. It's not even close because, one – this shit's been around for 100 years. You can literally go and see 1950 fights on YouTube right now. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And also, they're only 20, 30, 40-minute blocks anyway. So your attention span is not – you know what I mean? If you haven't seen a fight in 20 years, you're not going to remember every round. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's
true.
The funny part. You know, the boxing is like – I wouldn't say thriving in this time. I do think it'll be the first – UFC and that will be the first ones on TV, though, just because of the situation where they could put on a fight behind closed doors, you know, without the audience and whatnot. But, man, it's you're right, dude. It's that is going to be a big, big thing, dude, when they can when it's a live sport, whenever that comes on, man. It's pretty crazy, man. It is pretty crazy, and, you know, It's amazing how much we rely on that just to pass time or fill time or whatever. So, yeah, man, that's a great point. It's like,
well, and you know, we're speaking to the nation, but what about people like us that like truly love sports, or that's what our
right.
job is based off, like sport, you know, I love watching Carolina, the Nationals. I love watching Cowboys football. Like, there's
right.
so many people who are actually true diehard sport fans that are like, holy shit, what am I watching? Like, my go-to, you know, like my dad and grandpa always watch Twins games. My grandpa, like,
yeah.
he's really
they're
struggling.
They're just on every fucking night. Yeah, you're right.
I know.
Hey, you're right. That's a good point. That's a great point, especially for baseball. You just take advantage of it because it's there. I can always watch a game, you know.
I love the Washington Nationals announcers because I've listened the guys for about 5-6 years. I get the personality. It's just I come home off work, hey, here's 3 hours to pay attention, do some side work, and
right,
just watch
right,
the
right.
game and enjoy it. Because you got the boy, my poor grandpa, I can't get my grandpa to get in Netflix. The dude's like 85, 86. He's like, Marshall, I need the Twins on. I'm like, I know,
yeah,
grandpa.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
So
there is one minor positive news. I believe Tiger and Phil are looking at playing another heads up match.
I was wondering.
Tiger
I was
Phil,
wondering when that would happen.
And a camera guy, someone tweeted Mickelson, I think it's some random ass dude. It's like, hey, how about you and Tiger play again? And Phil and Tiger are like, we're working on it. So
right.
you'd have Tiger versus Phil in a streaming service. But I mean, even that, even if you're not a golf fan, you're like, oh shit, I'll watch
hey,
Tiger.
They better
okay.
beef that up though, because that'll crash quick, dude. If they don't have that stream right, it's just gonna crash, dude. Because so many people be feeding. You know, if it's not broadcast, then it's going to crash on the stream, dude. They better have a big platform, dude. That's hilarious, though. But it basically, for college hoops right now, you can find it, you know, on ESPN here and there. But as far as tourney games, CBS Sports Network is where to find the tourney games because they own the rights. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, the last 10 minutes of a game, the second half, blah, 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 blah. And also, and just keeping it hoops-wise, NBA TV has just been blasting 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s. They've been doing a bunch of NBA games. So that's something, too. And sometimes I'll put on some music or I'll listen to a different podcast or an interview, and I'll be – just watching the game, kind of, it'll just be there, you know, and I'll be like, okay, it's like 8 minutes left. I'm gonna put up the sound. I'm gonna actually watch the last part of this because it's a tight game, and it's just fun to watch that. So college hoops, really, honestly, tourney wise, CBS Sports Network, and then the NBA TV, dude. I have literally five games DVR'd. I'm not gonna watch the full games per se, but I'm gonna watch bits and chunks, or like I said, just put one on. And just, you know, chill out and like that Miami San Antonio series I'm gonna watch here soon.
I was having flashbacks of when I was a Knicks fan. Like when I grew up, I mean, because I was like Alaska, North Dakota, I really had no tie to anything. But I remember loving like the John Starks and Patrick Ewing and Anthony Mason teams. And they've been
Oh yeah,
and them versus the Bulls, them versus the Pacers, Bulls, nonstop, and that was. It was fun basketball, but man, that was such a different sport of like dudes like were, you know, staying in like the lane. There was no, you know, there was no Klay Thompson, Curry's camp out near 3-point line. Like you went for a layup and they hacked the shit out of you.
Well, there'd be one guy on the floor that could hit a three.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, yeah, you're right.
Right. So, there'd be one guy and sometimes that guy would come off the bench, but, imagine Jordan. And all these guys having to drive with that lane. First of all, the depth with power forward and center was disgusting, right? Obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But then the lane is so full. You know, there's so much people in the lane. You got to just take on the whole fucking team. And that's what was so funny about Jordan. It's like you see some of those Pistons series. But I remember that Charles Martin trying to get the rebound. Or he was getting the rebound. Remember that Charles Martin play? Or Charles Smith, sorry. Charles Smith. Charles Martin is a boxer. Charles Smith, where he's sitting there grabbing the rebound, gets it back up, goes back up, block, goes back up. It was like six times, dude. It was like, oh, my God. This dude. And he didn't get the bucket. It was like, all right, Knicks fans, you're done, dude. It's over. Good luck. Get him next year. And for those, you know, boxing's on YouTube. Also on FS1 and FS2, they play it a lot. Most of it's more current boxing in the last 5 years, 8 years. But if you have ESPN Plus, they have a library of Tyson and Ali and a lot of people, Sugar Ray Leonard and, you know, Floyd Mayweather and Oscar De La Hoya. And so just to keep an eye out. But let's get to college hoops, okay? Let's not forget about that. And we're going to break down this top 50 list. I want to start with, like, the top 15, top 20. Like I said, we're not going to go down this list and, you know, talk about every single one. You know, a guy like Mark, and remember, it's not where they got, where they're going to get drafted. It's about this year and the, you know, the numbers they put up, yada, yada, yada. It's a weird list because you could be on a team that's not going to make the tournament or is going to make the tournament and get one and done. And then you put up all these points, and they're empty fucking points. Whereas a better player on a better team will put up less numbers because he's got supporting cast. So it's a weird list. Like Marcus Howard, Marquette is a scoring machine, dude. You know what I mean? I mean, he led the freaking country, you know, and in the Marquette, the Marcus Howard, the Marquette numbers he put up, like historically in that conference and just in general, it's fucking really good. He had a bunch of 30-point games. So I think he's a top 10 guy no matter where he goes. But then you look at like Peyton Pritchard from Oregon. Had a damn good year in a mediocre conference. Flynn from San Diego State. This dude did have a great year. Great team, but I shouldn't say great team because we don't know if it's a great team just all the way yet because of who they played. I like their non-conference. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. I had them beating Gonzaga. So I just don't know if that dude for sure should be in the top 10 or 15 at the end of the day. I guess with the list, it's kind of a vague list that way. Luke Garza in the top 10, I agree with. Miles Powell is a guy that stood out to me and you as a guy that was probably too high ranked. The Kansas center had one of the best years. The top end from Dayton, who, by the way, did get player of the year, I wanted to mention. That's probably my biggest thing is Pritchard was damn good, no doubt. I think maybe Powell and him are a little high, though.
Yeah, I mean, Powell, I just, going into the year, I even remember texting my buddies about him, like, oh, my God, look at Seton Hall this year, because they started the year off so hot. But there were a lot of games this year because I fell in love with the Big East this year because my Carolina Tar Heels were a hard watch. But there was a lot of games here where he simply let his team down. Like, if Powell was on, they looked good. If he was off, they had to turn to McKnight and defense to help him win. So for this list, it really means nothing, life and death. But the dude has no business top 10. Like, Garza for Iowa, the guy pretty much brought it almost every night. And, you know, Malachi Flynn for SDSU, I mean, they went undefeated for almost the whole, you know. So I see a lot of these guys in the top that are like, okay, like, they have a reason. Pritchard, again, I think is a little overhyped like you. And the big Pac-12 for a guard maybe wasn't the toughest. But I see a lot of these cases. And Marcus Howard, he was basically taking a Marquette team that really struggled on the road and was almost going to take him into the tournament. And he didn't. I don't think Marquette had any other NBA lottery help with him. So I see a point for a lot of these guys in Cassius Winston 3, Azubuki 2, and Tulpin 1. Those all make sense. But, yeah, the Miles Powell, I'd put him more like the 12 to 13-ish, maybe 14 range, just because if you are a legit top 10 person in the country and the dude who wrote this is Mines article, like, you can't have off nights. Now, I'm not saying
like a bunch of them,
yeah. Now, again, I'm sure Garza had a shitty game. You could look it up and call me out on it, sure. But for the most part, Garza carried Iowa, and Garza didn't have 4 to 5 games where he didn't have a good night. And mind you, again, I still can't believe I saw this, but there were 2 out of 4 games in a sample where Seton Hall pulled Powell out of the game in a close game down the stretch. They benched him due to lack of defense. It wasn't foul trouble. It was just the coach took him off the court. And I remember telling you that, Chris, on one of our pods months ago, and I was like, dude, when's the last time you ever saw the best player on a team in college basketball, who is a guard,
get pulled
by the coach when you're trying to win a game? Like, you have to really try hard to find that. And that's not a lie at all. You can argue with me on that one. When you're taking the best, well, in theory, the best person on your team, who is your point guard and ball distributor, and pulling him off the game when it's, I believe one time it was a 5-point game with 2 minutes to go and they benched him. It's like, holy shit. Like, you're going to sub the in and out game for offense and defense? So, not to ramble on too much longer, but yeah, I would have not had him in the top 10.
Yeah, we get it. You don't like Powell, okay? Jesus Christ, leave
the guy's going to go pro. But he just, you need more consistent productivity.
Dude, he shot his, it even says right here, he ended the year shooting under 40% from the field. You know?
Doesn't surprise me at all.
That doesn't seem like a top 10 guy to me, but, you know, it is what it is. I think I love the fact that there's this many centers on this list. I guess that's going to be interesting as they go to the pros and see if they can fit in into the new program or the newer program. But it's also about watching the team and how key a player is. And the reason why I'm bringing this up to them, I mean, it may not be a big name, but Xavier Tillman, perfect example. You know, it even says right here, 13, you know, almost 14 points, 10 boards. That's pretty good in college. But, you know, when he was on the court and when they started him and all that, like, he really was a big difference maker. Now, is he the 14th best player? No. But, man, to that team, it did make, like, the guy right after him, Vernon Carey Jr., probably a way better player, you know, than him. But you got it. We got it. And same with Arturo, but who's 16th. And maybe Halliburton, who's 17, he's probably going to be a top 10 pick. You got to remember it's not just talent, it's college basketball. So you got to let these guys be college basketball players too. You know, and some of it, like Quigley, the guard from Kentucky, the way he was closing the season, I probably would put him in the top 20. But as far as the whole season, I'm not 100% sure I put him there, but then you got a guy like from Florida State, Vassell, or Vassell, I think it's Vassell, the Devin dude. He's 25th. They won the ACC. They could have went to the Final Four. Shit, this year they could have won it, I guess you could say. The guy should be a top 15 player, you know. What are some other players that you go, huh, I'm not quite sure about. Why is he this low? Why is he that high?
I got a couple of issues. I do think that if you are looking for a big picture, like, I know this is not an NBA draft, but that a lot of people believe that actually your Gophers and their center Oturu might have been maybe the second best big in the country after Toppin. So Oturu at 16 is maybe a little critical. Now, again, did Minnesota have the year that Dayton did? No. But if you look at numbers, I think I want to say this. Oturu was, I think, the only guy that averaged over 20 and 13 in a game this year. So if you're the only big in the country that averages 20 points a game and over 13 boards a game, you're probably more than a top 16. And he was doing it in arguably the best conference in the country this year. So Oturu at 16 was a little bit weird. My biggest issue, the one that I told you about for the show, is I scrolled up too high. Isaiah Stewart for Washington. And I know I just gave credit to Toppin and Oturu. This is probably the other best guy I saw play all year. And I only saw the dude play about three or four games in Washington. But there is some sense of when you're a college basketball fan like us, Chris, you can just tell, dude, like, this guy's meant for NBA. Like, when I watched him play Arizona, whenever it was one-on-one coverage, it wasn't even – there was no defense. There was no stopping the guy. He's built like a football player. His post moves are incredible. Like, I think the guy's going to be a stud. And I look forward to seeing how he goes. So to put Stewart, who I would say is the third or fourth best big in the whole country, who was a dominant force as a freshman, I think he's got to be top 15, top 16 for sure. So I'm probably off by about 25 spots. Now, maybe at the start of the year he had was a little bit rough. Maybe I didn't see that. But later in the year, when you're basically commanding a double team from teams in college basketball, most bigs don't do that, Chris. There are just exceptions, but I mean, the dude was just a man amongst boys as a freshman. So I'm going to throw some stock into him and hope that pans out to be right. And lastly, all right, two more things. That Precious Akuwu for Memphis, he's also going to be an NBA draft pick just because he's a really talented big. He was 46th. Now, he's maybe not quite as good as Toppin and Oturu. I'm focused on the bigs, I guess, but the dude is maybe one of the most...
A lot of bigs this year, dude.
I don't know. He is probably the most athletic big of all the names mentioned. Like, Oturu, Garza, Stewart, who I just talked about, Toppin, they're post people. He was a post kind of slash guard. Like, there were a lot of games for Memphis this year where he dribbled the ball up the court and made the plays. So not only do you got a big who can, like, work the paint, he can also step back and hit threes and, like, run the court. So to put him 46th,
And he kept that team competitive after they lost What's-His-Toes, too, you know?
Oh, with Wiseman, who would have been probably the top name on this no matter what, you know?
Right.
So I guess I have a few issues with those. Now, again, this is a subjective poll. I'm sure if you and I made this, there'd be people saying the same thing about our list. I just think he was a little too tough on some of those bigs, but I would have put Stewart a lot higher in theory and Precious Akuwu a lot higher, just to kind of have an argument for the sake of this. Any ones that jumped out to you of, man, why did they put him here?
Well, I got two more things. One, there's too many fucking West Coast fucking players on this list. I hate to do the West Coast bias. You know, that's usually a college football Heisman thing, right? I get it. I'm not trying to be a dick. But let's be honest. The Pac-12 is mediocre at best, dude. Mediocre, right? And then, you know, I mean, sure, Gonzaga's fun to watch. San Diego State had a hell of a year. The Mountain West isn't what it was even a chunk of years ago. Like, there's just too many West Coast players on this fucking list, to be honest with you. I think so. I'm sorry. Sorry, West Coast, but it's true. Come on. And then one, if we're just talking college, right, because this isn't a draft. And by the way, I don't know if I said it another time, but this is SB Nation top 25. Or top 50, sorry. So you could you know, Google that shit, it'll pop right up. But if we're just talking college performance, John Mooney from Notre Dame, okay? I hate to sound like this Midwestern dude. You never heard of John Mooney. Oh, my God. You know, I'm not talking about that. But if we're talking college basketball, not the pros, but college basketball, this dude is a double-double waiting to happen. He's gotten a double-double just in the time we started recording the show 30 minutes ago. He's already got one. 25 out of 31 games this year, he had a double-double. Led the nation in double-doubles. Now, his shooting percentage isn't great. It even says it right here. Because of his three-point, he's not a great three-point shooter, but this fucking guy put up a ton of numbers. He should be higher if we're just going players in college basketball, not, you know, projecting them to the pros. But that's all I got. Just, you know, hey, you know, too many West Coast players, dude. Come on, dude. It's all their awards. This is what they win. This is how they win. But these aren't even awards.
I don't know. My last part to wrap it up is that Kamar Baldwin for Butler didn't make the effing list. Dude hit two buzzer beaters over eight teams.
True.
And doesn't make the top 50. And I pulled the dude averaged 16 points a game. He was Butler's best player. Like 100% should have been on here, like, period. I can even get where they put some of the bigs I read about, but you're leaving off a guy who was on it. Butler was ranked the whole year, pretty much on and off the whole year, but the dude hit two buzzer beaters, I believe, against Marquette and Nova and carried this team. And you don't put him on the list? That is stupid. You're right, Chris. There was a little too much love in the West Coast because you can't leave off, in my opinion, one of the best, biggest guards of the whole year.
They should have been like the top 50 West Coast dudes. And I'd have been cool with that list, you know? And don't get me wrong, West Coast, okay? But come on, let's be honest. Like, let's be honest. How good is the Pac-12?
So, well, you know, with my current theme, I'm going to start off with one of my stories. I'll throw it to you just because it ties in what we've been talking about.
This is great.
And I'm speaking of bigs, you know, going back to a moment, you know, and Chris has kind of been asking me, dude, go back and look at moments that you just have always enjoyed of college basketball. And so to put this to your YouTube cue list, you should watch the 1995-96 Syracuse Orangemen run. This just kind of hit me in the head. I was like, man, I remember when, you know, John Wallace, and I always confuse it with John Wallace winning the title, and they didn't. But if you want to watch a fun run and literally a dude carrying a team on his back, the 1995-1996 Syracuse Orangemen and John Wallace, I remember I just love the guy. Maybe it was the jerseys, the name, something. Syracuse started off the year 11-0. They had little tough patch in the Big East where they went 2-5. They made a couple of lineup changes, or last 2 out of 5. And then they made a tournament run, which no one predicted at all. And John Wallace goes on this hell of a run and actually takes his team to play in the national title against
That's
Kentucky.
That's right, against Kentucky. That's right.
Who end up having four future NBA players.
Yeah.
And actually, Syracuse was down 13 points at half. They cut it down to 2. I think Wallace hit a couple of threes. I know the dude had foul trouble all game. And Kentucky ended up winning 76-67. But if you want to watch a fun tournament run, like I mentioned last week, watching Curry with Davidson and watching Florida Gulf Coast Dunk City, watch Florida. Watch the Syracuse run with John Wallace. Because, I mean, he was the only guy that went pro. No one else on the team did. And literally, you were just kind of a, who the hell are these people? And he was kind of a big that could really shoot the three. And he just kind of carried the team. So we've talked a lot about people making runs as teams in the past couple of weeks, Chris. This dude literally almost took his whole damn team to a national title. Like, I didn't know you yet, but I'm sure you were watching this game. Remember the name. But,
oh, yeah. I remember where I was watching the game. Yeah. Yep.
They beat Mississippi State in the Final Four to make it to the national title, which people didn't expect, so I'm probably going to watch that tomorrow. He beat Kansas in the Elite Eight, which was, again, a Kansas team that had three future NBA pros. I think it was the Jacques Vaughn Rafael team.
That's the one I'm talking about now. Come on. It's funny how you tied it in.
So anyways, the John Wallace run, put that on the list. It was a hell of a fun run. The dude could ball. I don't think he had much. He didn't have a huge NBA career, but put that on your YouTube list to enjoy. focus especially on that Final Four versus Mississippi State and watch some fun, just good old college basketball.
That's a good dig, dude. That's a good find. And right when you start saying, like, 95, 96, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, that's right. They went to the title game. I do remember that squad. Yeah, that's a good call. And by the way, once again, we talked about if you're following home at home, if you're at home following along is what I meant to say. This sportsreference.com, sports/reference.com is the shit. Okay, you can go to any year, any team, any year, and it gives you roster, it gives you the stats right there, and it gives you the games, their schedule. And it has these little NBA things to show who played in the NBA, you know what I mean? Like if you forget, oh, that's right, he did play in the NBA. So just so you guys know, that's kind of what we're going off of. That's what we're referencing at times just because, you know, you can have it in your head and be like, oh, I remember that squad. But then when you look at it, you start to look through their schedule and their roster. You're like, oh, that's right. I remember that dude off the bench. And I'm going to talk UConn 90s. And basically, this is another, like, program that really captured my teenage and into my 20s years right in that realm. I talked about Duke. The good, the bad, the ugly with Duke. Well, you know, I tried to join them in a sense and bet on them and got beat when they got beat by Arkansas. Then I had UConn, you know, beat them because there was a local tie, and that's where I'm going to start. I did talk about UNLV the other show too, but this year, I mean, I'm going to get to the championship year when they beat Duke, but UConn started really turning the corner all the way. And started getting a lot of good players. This 94-95 roster, dude. It had Ray Allen as their number one player. It had the Marshall brothers, Danielle Marshall at the time. Or no, this is Donnie Marshall. But they at one point had the Marshall brothers. They had Kevin Olley, which we obviously know as a head coach now and played for the Sixers. Travis Knight, too, that center. So this is when I really started paying attention to them. This is 94-95. And they started to make some noise. I really thought that they should have went a little further that year, actually. And in that year, even a year before that, too, right in this realm, it was kind of like Nova, Villanova, and even like Virginia, how they'd have these great seasons. And even, you know, a chunk of years ago now, Pittsburgh. Remember Pittsburgh there for a while, started producing really good, you know, number one seeds, number two seeds, number three, have a great year, win the Big East, and then get beat in the round of 32. I'm not saying that was happening to them every time, but they should have been winning a little bit more in my opinion. But then they, this is 96-97, they got Rip Hamilton. At this time, he wasn't Rip. It was just Richard Hamilton and Jake Vosko. And Ricky Moore, who was like their defensive guy. So they started to really, and this is when you kept your roster a lot more too, obviously. And then my boy from Minneapolis North, Khalid Al-Amin, joined as a freshman. And I actually said this wrong. It wasn't a freshman when they won the championship. This was before. But they started kind of getting this nucleus going. And you could kind of see it like, oh, dude, this squad is pretty good now. You know, they're getting really good. And by the time, you know, that 98-99 season came around, they basically kept all this talent. So they had Rip, they had Al-Amin, they still had Vosko, you know, for the long kind of center. And that Ricky Moore, Freeman was a good kind of slash forward as well, kind of like an all-purpose rebounder and scorer. Kevin Freeman, but Ricky Moore was that, hey, you go guard that dude. You know, that was who that was. And that team, I kind of liked them, but then once Cal went there, I was like, oh, dude, that's like my second squad. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going for them. And, man, they made a run. I remember there was a pretty good, pretty decent Iowa game that was a pretty close call. But that was a competitive game. I remember that. They beat Gonzaga. That was a competitive game. They beat Ohio State. And then they beat Duke 77-74. I believe Trajan Langdon had a shot or had a look at it to keep in overtime. And that's the team that had Elton Brand, Trajan Langdon, William Avery, Corey Maggette, and Sean Battier as a sophomore. Now, he stayed around, ended up winning a championship. But that was – I was so happy that night. One, they were beating Duke, who had burnt me against Arkansas, right? And two, I mean, they were fun to watch, great coach and everything, but, you know, the hometown Minneapolis North guy was on there. You know what I mean? So I really, really, like, appreciated that squad. And that's kind of like, you know, the start to their legacy. And they really have a lot of people. Of course, they know UConn and all that. But, man, you know, they kind of had to rebuild that team, obviously. But then they had a squad that went, you know, really, really deep. But in 2001 and 2002, you start looking at their squad. Butler, Gordon, Okafor. I remember Talik Brown was that defensive stopper. Robertson was just kind of an off guard who could, you know, put up some points. And I don't know. To me, even though, you know, El Amin wasn't there anymore, I just was into this program. I like their style of play. Obviously, they're playing in a tough-ass conference, you know what I mean, in the Big East. And to me, I just really started honing in on them. And I was just, like, following their stuff. Now, they got beat by Maryland that year. They played Hampton in the first round, beat North Carolina State, beat Southern Illinois. And I remember that Southern Illinois team now that I look at that. Oh, shit, that's right. They lost 90-82 to Maryland. And that, so that would have been 2001-2002. And just looking at them, they seem like, okay, are they're kind of underachieving now at times. You know, are they going to win a championship here? Because to me, it's like they've had some squads now, and sometimes that happens with the one and done, not necessarily the one and dones we know now, because the one and done wasn't really still in play yet. But the year that they did win, oh, my God, dude. Ben Gordon, Emeka Okafor, that Rashad Anderson was a damn good player. They still had that Brown defender slasher. They had Charlie Villanova. They had Hilton Armstrong. They had a young freshman, Marcus Williams, who was on a squad that probably should have won that ended up losing. Like, that freaking squad was so deep, and they were so dominant. And I just remember, like, watching those teams and being like, wow, dude, they're so stacked. They had the big man. They had that East Coast guard. It was just fun to watch them. I mean, there was just no way around it. And they ended up getting beat by North Carolina State. I think it was that next year. And I was kind of shocked at that. So sometimes you have these great years, and they just kind of turn out like, wow, you guys really didn't do much. And actually, another one I want to talk about with UConn was a team that I thought would win. So it's kind of a combination thing. This team got beat. I mean, they barely snuck by first of all, they beat Kentucky 87-83 in the round of 32. Then they had to go overtime 98-92. I just saw that Washington game. They beat them, but that was the year that they got beat by George Washington. And that, I talk about a Cinderella story of George Washington. They had the bigs. They had some guards. It was just fun to freaking watch that team. But if you look at that team, they had Rudy Gay. They still had that senior Rashad Anderson, who's just a good defender. They had, by that time, Josh Boone. They still had a Hilton Armstrong. They had Jeff Adrian, too, who was a very solid power forward. But that Marcus Williams had really put it together. And although he didn't have, like, some kind of great pro career, in college, that dude could do some damage, man. That I really liked him. I thought he was one of the best point guards that year. And, you know, that Ja Lewis and Tony Skin and Butler, Lamar Butler, William Thomas – that was the team that beat them, that George Mason team. So, we may talk the last couple of years with UConn, I'll kind of slow down on some of that because I have been kind of going long in this segment. But that run that they had that started somewhere in the 94, 95, 96, started really piling up, you know, the wins and whatnot. And to pull down as many titles as they did, you know, in that time frame, I was pretty impressed by that run. And it just, their last two weren't like that. You know, their last two championships were definitely not like that. They were on some, you know, underdog type stuff. Whereas before, there was a couple of games that they should have won. Was that Maryland team? Was that the Maryland team I'm thinking about? Did they win the championship that year? Is that that Juan Dixon team? I think it is, dude.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, Dixon,
that
Baxter, Wilcox, Steve Blake, Nichols, Drew Nichols. I remember that dude.
Loaded.
Yeah, you're right. Wow. So, yeah, that's kind of my thing for UConn. You know, they won a chunk of championships and a somewhat, you know, short area, a small area there, and they've added two since then that we'll talk about maybe next week. But to me, that really just, I don't know, man, that just summed it up for me. I was a big fan of that squad, and like I said, some of it was just me being a hardcore fan and watching it, and actually it wasn't that. Yeah, it was that year. It was that year they beat UConn in the Elite Eight, and they beat Kansas and Indiana, Maryland I'm speaking of. So, yeah, I don't know. It was the combination of being a hardcore, you know, fan and watching it, but also once, you know, El Amin from here was there, once a local guy, and he's the point guard coming into it at such a great, you know, program, I was like, yeah, this is going to be my second squad for a while.
Yeah, I'll touch on my team I've loved for a really long time, and I think it's going to be easy to kind of figure out why. My mom always said I fell in love with Carolina because I liked the color blue and I liked Jordan. I don't really ever remember watching Jordan play. I mean, with my time frame, subconsciously, I suppose I could have seen some of Jordan, but I don't recall.
No, you didn't. Barely saw Jordan. That's like the first national championship where I remember Worthy kicked ass and Jordan hit that shot. And so, and I'm older than you.
I mean, I could have been playing with some Legos and squares and my dad could have the game on, technically speaking. But nonetheless, I've always been a Tar Heels fan, and I'm going to touch on two teams I loved in the early 90s. And next week I'll hit on the 2000s, some of the titles they've won. In 94, I mean, like, legit, I'm not bragging. I got lucky. I'm very spoiled. Because in the 94-95 team, when Dean Smith was the coach, may he rest in peace, one of the greatest coaches of all time, that team had sophomore forward Jerry Stackhouse, sophomore forward Rasheed Wallace, Shimon Williams was a freshman, and Jeff McInnes, who I don't really know much about, but I know the dude went pro.
He was a stud, too. Stud point guard, dude. Stud.
I mean, just let alone, I remember watching games, and I was, at this time, I was 10 and 11 or so. But I just remember watching Stackhouse and Moss. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, how do you have a team with these bigs who no one can stop? And I will say, a couple of years ago, I actually met Rasheed Wallace. I was at a high school, one of those high school tournaments at AAU, and a good friend I've coached with at Cleaver my first 2 years down here loves going to those. And he's like, holy shit, that's Rasheed Wallace. You should go say hi, man. And Chris, I'm not lying. First, the only time in my life I've ever literally had to tilt my neck up and look at a man. Like, holy God. Like, I wasn't even staring at his shoulders. It was like, I just want to say thanks for being a Tar Heel, or thanks for being a great Carolina player. I've always been a fan. I just gave him knuckles and walked away. But I mean, the dude is a 6'9", like walking specimen of like a football body. Like, holy cow. So, that was my younger Carolina year.
Wait a second. Was that the year? Sorry about that, but was that that Duke game, that double overtime crazy ass Duke game? Was that that year?
Yeah.
I feel like it was.
ESPN always replays that crap. Yeah.
That was a great year, dude. Because Jeff Capel hit that fucking, like, half quarter almost to go into overtime.
When Duke was, like, you know, like 3-13 in the year at that point or something.
Right, yeah, they had it. Yep, down year, that's right.
And that year, Carolina went to the Elite, or actually, excuse me, they went to the Elite Eight and beat Kentucky, and then they lost to Arkansas in the Final Four. I mean, you know, looking back, that was around the time where Arkansas was pretty damn good. I'd want to bet that Corliss Williamson was on that 95 Arkansas team, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, Scotty Thurman.
So, yeah.
They were a good squad. What's his toes, the coach? I'm losing it. What? Why don't 48 minutes or 40 minutes of hell. What the hell?
Nolan Richardson.
Nolan Richardson. Jeez, thank you. Because that was like a sin for me not to remember his ass.
I mean, Carolina, they averaged 84 points a game. They went 28-6. Dean Smith was just kind of coming near the end of the run, I guess you could say. But they had a hell of a year. So that's when the love began for Carolina. And now looking back, and I know this team didn't win a title, but easily my favorite Carolina team of all time was 97-98. And it's really cool because actually that year when I was living in Alaska because my dad wanted to live there for a couple of years as a pilot, and North Carolina actually came up to the Alaska Open.
The shootout.
Alaskan shootout. That used to actually be a really good tournament. I saw
used to be the premier tournament.
I saw Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, Louisville, Carolina. I mean, the thing was effing loaded. Syracuse, it was fun. But for that year, I actually went to see Carolina play, and I thought it was my birthday. It was actually the day before. Carolina won the Alaskan Shootout Championship against Purdue in overtime. Excuse me. They beat Brian Cardinal, and if you remember Purdue, you remember the dude looked like he was like 37 years old.
Know,
he was playing
right?
college basketball. He had like a receding hairline.
he's like that dude in eighth grade that has like a 5 o'clock shadow, and then by the time you're seniors, everyone's like towering over him.
And I remember the first game of their tournament, they played UCLA, and they won 109-68. And I remember one time where I swore Vince Carter's like body was level with the rim. I'll never forget. And this was, you know, a long time ago. Almost a long time ago, 23 years ago. I'll never forget the dude literally just jumping out the gym. And then me and my dad went to watch, obviously, Purdue, and they won the title. That was kind of the highlight, probably one of the best birthday presents of my life. And then they ended up going that year, and I'll never forgive effing fucking Utah.
Yeah, it was Keith Van Horn at that time.
Van Horn and that Dokic or
he's like a power forward, kind of a husky dude.
Damn,
he played
white
the pros
boy.
For a little bit.
Again, lost in the Final Four. You want to talk about best teams that ever not win a title? I'm obviously completely biased, but that Carolina team was. I mean, and I think that Andre Miller on Utah too. I mean, Utah wasn't a bad team.
That's
at all,
what it was. Miller, and they had the coach, the stud coach, too, starts with an M. He passed. Keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, so for that team, I mean, your starting five was Ed Cota, Shimon Williams, Antoine Jameson, Vince Carter, and Brandon Haywood. And then Dye came off the bench, sixth man. I love that team, and mainly because Ed Cota, him and Loss are my favorite Tar Heels of all time. Cota went down, still has record. I believe he's like top three or top four assist leaders of all time in the ACC. He never went pro, but the dude did win. He went to play ball in Europe, and the guy won 5 out of 6 titles in his first 6 years there. He was a tremendous point guard. He was probably too short to play in the NBA and didn't have quite an offensive game. But if you want to watch someone that just knew how to pass the ball and could score when he had to, I wish they could have just beat that damn Utah team. That one still gets me, Chris, even though that was a long-ass time ago. I still don't forgive Utah for that day. They just couldn't quite find the rhythm. But sadly, that team's run came to an end. But after seeing Rasheed Wallace, Stackhouse, Jameson, Vince Carter, man, my choices were pretty well set. I was going to become a Carolina Tar Heel fan for a long time, man. There was no ifs, ands, or buts from that point on. Hell, that year, Carolina went 34-4. Bill Guthridge had taken over, so again, the Dean Smith run had ended, and Guthridge actually did a pretty damn good job taking over. Now, was he Dean Smith? No, but the dude... he was solid, though. He had the recruits coming in, and the names kept coming. So I didn't get to see those teams win titles, but the seeds were planted, and I was a Tar Heel fan for life and still am. But yeah, so that's my early 90s, or I should say 90s Carolina, and then next week I'll hit on just the teams that have cut down the nets with the 04, 09, and 17. So I'm spoiled, man. I really am.
Yeah, you really are, especially those last chunk of years when Golden State and North Carolina. God, that was. I'm so glad those days are over. But anyway, but there was a couple of them where I'm like, oh, like that one year where it was like the buzzer beater Nova, and then fucking Kyrie and LeBron is like, oh, dog, oh my God.
So
yeah, that's a rough one for you.
For the Nova game. My dad had come. I was living in Fargo at the time, and my dad came down to visit me because my dad's awesome. But that was also the same. It was opening day as well, and I was with a bunch of buddies in Fargo. And our idea was, let's go drink a shitload of beer and watch opening day at noon. You can see where this is going, Chris. So we did drink a lot of beer and shots and liquor. So I hate admitting this, but I literally. With 20 seconds.
It sounds like a story you should tell next week. How deep are we getting into this?
All right. No, it's about to be done in a minute. So I literally had to go and throw up, and I remember I was walking back to the living room.
And I heard
the Jim Nantz voice come on, and it was the point where they have kind of like a bar set up, and then the living room is there downstairs.
Yeah.
And I heard the crowd, and I was like, oh, I think I walked right back to the bathroom. I heard the echoes, and I was like, oh, and I was like, fuck. But we came back next year, and I'll get to that story. The boys came back next year, and they took care of business. But, yeah, I'll never forget that damn opening day, drinking too much, throwing up.
Okay, that's enough North Carolina talk, for Christ's sake.
Okay, all right.
I did it, though. It's my fault. I led you there. I'm gonna hold off on the Big East. Actually, next week, we're going to talk, you know, some teams – but we are going to talk a little bit more about Big East tournament games or players.
Sure.
And we're going to go back to the best teams that never won it. That'll be kind of beyond our part twos of North Carolina, part two UConn stuff. And you know, random players or whatever. And we will talk a little bit about the players that didn't get to finish this year and the scholarship thing. Because there is an underlining thing when it comes to money with that. We'll talk about that next week. But one more thing I'm going to talk about is the Rock Chalk Jayhawks, right? The Kansas Jayhawks. This squad was silly, dude. The squad they had, 96-97, 34-2 on the year, 15-1 in the Big 12, okay? I mean, they were second in scoring out of 306. They averaged 85 point a game. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And this is before you filled up your rosters with one and dones. In fact, there's not a freshman of any on that played barely. Okay. So remember that. Okay. When you say, well, that team had five. No, dude, they literally had six pros on this fucking team. So you had Paul Pierce. Pretty good player, from what I hear. You know what I mean? I heard that he had a pretty good NBA team or, you know, run as well. Ralph LaFrenz, a pretty damn studly player center-wise, went to Denver right out, played, you know, had a good career, nothing crazy. Scott Pollard, just a bruiser, who had a decent career, you know what I mean? I remember the Kings, he was a bruiser on that as well. Jacques Vaughn, who had, you know, he's like a backup point guard for Utah, for a while, you know, went around. But a senior guard that year, Jacques Vaughn, just made it work. Also, Ryan Robertson was another pro who was just kind of a shooter, long, lanky dude. And they had Jared Haas, who actually didn't make it, you know, didn't make the pros, never played for the pros. He was a senior. But this dude could light it up. He was a damn good player. So you're looking at six former NBA players, dude. And really, I mean, the ones that stand out are LaFrenz, Pierce, and Jacques Vaughn. And they could play the half court. They could run up and down. These dudes were damn good, dude. And I remember where I was when they freaking lost, too. I remember I was at my dad's house with, like, two other people just like, all right, we're going to watch this game. Kansas is going to win. Then we're going to go do whatever we're going to do. Not so much. That's not how it went. That year, they beat Jackson State, you know, first round. Then they beat Purdue, who had a pretty good club that year. Then they lost to Arizona, 85-82. And Arizona that year would end up, you know, doing the thing. Like, it wasn't as, like, when you look at that Arizona club, you go, huh, like, that's really not that, you know, it doesn't seem, it's like, well, how did that happen? You know what I mean? They went on to, they beat Kansas, and that was in the Sweet 16. This fucking team that was just the number one team, I think, with a bullet, and they got beat in the Sweet 16. So they went on to beat Providence, then, sorry to hear it, but they beat North Carolina that year and beat Kentucky. And when you look at that squad kind of snuck up on you because we knew they were good. We knew they had some players and all that. But that the way they do, they were 25-9. They were now given. I was going to say the Pac-12, but it was the Pac-10. But it's also they were a better conference. I just got done ripping the West Coast. They were 11-7, fifth in that conference, and they won the championship. They had Michael Dickerson, who was like a forward, Mike Bibby, I know you heard of him.
Love that guy.
Miles Simon, another damn good player who had a huge shot in that game. And they had Jason Terry, might have heard of him. And also this A.J. Barmlett. He was the center, that's right. And Bennett Davison was pretty good too. But that squad was a team that no one really saw coming that much, but they went on to beat some of the best team, and then beat Kentucky, who was damn good at that time, obviously, and beat North Kakalaka that year, too. So that kind of turned me on to Arizona a little bit, because I was like, oh, okay, what do we got here? And then they went on a run with Lute Olson. So, but to me, that year, man, I had all my ducks in a row, all my eggs in a basket, and that Kansas squad was going to win, and it surely did not.
I could honestly do a full show podcast of Kansas chokes. I mean, I might just have to do that on my own one day. I mean, because there is a list, and they're a hell of a program. They have tons and tons and tons of wins, maybe the top three most wins of all time, maybe number one. But they have been a team who have had trouble. Now, Grant, the team you said, they made a good run. But there's been a nice line.
They got
list
beat
of,
in the Sweet 16. I don't see that as a big run. Oh, but okay. You know what, they did get beat by the champs. So
yeah. So, but the Kansas has been known for first and second round exits. I bet there's probably five or six chokes in the past 10, 11 years. I might have to do a little quick pop on that. But, yeah, it's just fun, man, looking back on with where we're at now, looking back on all these great college basketball players, just because we've got nothing else to do. Like, I remember telling you last week watching that Pittsburgh game, you know, I remember Kevin Pitsnoggle. Like, I never knew I did not remember his name at all. But in that game, the dude dropped, like, 30-plus in the game. You know, it's like you hear these names, and it's like, holy shit, I remember watching this guy and this guy and that guy, but –
yeah.
That's why
that Sports Reference is such a cool website, because the names are right there and you're like, oh, that's right, he did play in the league, or that dude was so good in college, but that's right, he didn't play in the league. You know what I mean? I actually I sent you something. We're not going to go over it now, but I did send you something of the 36 best teams that didn't win a championship. So we'll definitely hone in on some of those teams next week, and we'll just keep this going for as long as you guys want to do it. We're not going to stretch it in seven more shows or whatever, but we are going to keep this thing going as long as you guys want us to do it. Why don't you get us out of here, sir?
Well, I always finish the pod, always stay safe and enjoy time with your family and loved ones. But especially now, you know, the numbers show that we're unfortunately going to have people who are going to not survive the crisis. So stay safe, wash your hands, and stay inside. Don't be like some people in Florida who are continuing to go and party and live on the beach and live regular life, because it's really going to get bad. Like, the hospitals are going to get overflooded eventually. So stay inside, go for runs in the park, take your dog out for a walk. But just we want you to keep listening to our podcast, where you can do that in the luxury of your own house. So until next week, when we talk about a bunch of great teams, the boys are out tonight. Have a good one. Peace.